We would like to welcome to the podcast a new sponsor for 2025, HRO Adventures. Rusty and Jackie run the ultimate outdoor adventure location outside of Cooley City, Washington. Rusty provides world-class guided mule deer hunts, guided or DIY pheasant hunts, and other upland bird hunts too. If you have a special occasion coming up, a special corporate outing that you would like to set up, or a place that you would like to do your own private group training, give Rusty a call today. He specializes in the custom experience. Everything from hunting to bird watching you can find at HRO Adventures. Look them up at hroadventures.com and hiddenranchoutfitters.com. Tell them Dave sent you.
You've been looking for a way out, a way to kick that old dip habit without giving up the satisfaction. Introducing Schmitty's Herbal Dip. No tobacco, no nicotine. Just a satisfying blend of natural teas and rich flavors, packed with real flavor and designed to ease the craving. Schmitty's is the perfect way to enjoy that familiar dip experience while moving toward a healthier you. Whether you're looking to quit or just want a cleaner option, Schmitty's Herbal Dip has your back. Schmitty's Herbal Dip. Quit the habit, keep the ritual. No spitter required. Available in stores and online now. Make the switch today. Go to schmitty's.com.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the HRO Adventures podcast number 7. Rusty, did you think we'd make it to 7?
Oh, man. We just keep clicking them off, but they're amazing every time.
Yeah. Hey, we want to give a special thank you and shout out to the Snoqualmie Inn, located here in beautiful Snoqualmie, Washington, today on a great day. Lori Hayes, the manager, and she's graciously donated the meeting room space for us to conduct the podcast today.
She was so nice to us when we came in. I think you were in the bathroom or something, so I had to introduce myself, and then she goes, "I knew that was you." So I'm afraid what kind of reputation I have already.
Yeah,
so.
I walked in. Are you guys the outdoor podcast? It's like, whoa, okay. But hey, you know, the Snoqualmie Inn's very new. It's 99 rooms, so it's just nice. A funny number. Just off of I-90 and intersection of Highway 18, and it's on Snoqualmie Ridge. One of the reasons we're trying to promote it is I do a lot of stuff outside of this with travel sports teams and lacrosse, girls lacrosse mainly. And this place is the perfect place for travel teams with the Sirius Sports Complex down the hill and some of the tournaments that happen up here, baseball, lacrosse, soccer. This would be the perfect place to house the team as the person who's had to do that job and find 15 rooms for people in a certain budget and whatnot. Just contact Lori Hay. She's aware of what your budget restrictions will be, and this is a perfect place. You can walk to all the different food options, and it'd be great for a sports team.
Well, I can tell you,
yeah,
this is a safe place.
This is the safe place.
You actually, you bring in a sports team in here, mm-hmm. teenagers. As been somebody that's been the chaperone on a few of those trips. You got food that they can walk to, and mm-hmm. they don't have to cross a busy street.
Don't have to cross the street.
You know, it's a new, pretty new area.
It is.
The Safeway right here is mm-hmm. beautiful, and then there's a Starbucks for the parents.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Like kids go there nowadays.
Irish pub right across the street via the crosswalks.
Well, that's for the parents.
That's what I'm saying.
The Irish pubs.
But also, when I was talking to Lori, in addition to sports teams, this is a great place if anybody in the outdoor business needs to hold a seminar for something.
Absolutely,
it's super scenic. There's plenty of fields if you needed to do, say, fly casting or something like that, and wanted to run down to some of the ball fields and do things like that. But super outdoor friendly and sports friendly and trailer friendly and all that. So just look up the Snoqualmie Inn and contact Lori, and she will take care of you. But I just wanted to mention that super super neat place to have.
So. I'm very thankful for it. Yep.
Yeah. Before we get into intros, we've got cousin Rick joining us today, Rusty's cousin. But before we get into intros, I've got a couple safety items that I thought would be interesting and make sense as turkey season kicks off today. Also, I guess tax season ends today, doesn't it? Holy cow. I was ahead of the game this year, so don't know if that helped me or not. But
so you're not late on your taxes, but did you go out turkey on this morning?
No, I'm going Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah, okay. Thursday. I got a buddy coming up from Gig Harbor, actually, and we'll go check out the Tiano A, see what's crawling out there. Let's see. There was a, and I don't have all the details, but I have a story for it. There was somebody that was skinning, I believe it was a youth turkey hunt just the other day, and their knife got a hold of them. And they opened themselves up, and a tourniquet saved the day. And so it just reminded me that, especially with bow season stuff, with broadheads and skinning, that's the kind of thing that'll get an artery, right, if you're not careful. So a tourniquet, Cat 7 tourniquets from North American Rescue off of Amazon, $35, can be a very inexpensive, life-saving piece of equipment, super easy to use. So, again, with broadheads and Havilon knives and all the cool stuff out there, if that sucker gets you, you know, 10 miles away from the truck, you may wish you had a tourniquet with you. So I would get a couple, throw them in your bag. And make sure you open them, make sure you try them out, practice with them, and, you know, just...
And I got my new tourniquet.
Yeah, perfect.
Pouch.
Yeah. But like I said, just that happened just the other day. I've got up there Pat's story. So a guy I fly with, a really nice guy, Pat, lives in Montana, big-time hunter, bow hunter. A couple years ago, he had some new carbon arrows. He's at full draw. And as he releases, the arrow shatters, goes right through his wrist.
Oh.
So he is way, way off the grid and basically had to, he found some guys, I believe they were on alpacas or bringing in alpacas to pack. That's how far out he was. And they were able to fashion a tourniquet and he ended up having to get airlifted out. And it was a, they sent the arrow into the manufacturer and it was a, just a bad batch of carbon and just a freak thing, probably never happened again. But it came, you know how short some people have it with the rest, right? And it came off and went right through here. And he was probably going to bleed to death if he didn't find those guys. And so, anyway, just again, a tourniquet. I mean, I teach second graders at Cub Scouts how to use them. They are effective. And just you should have a couple in your bag when you're dealing with this kind of stuff. So, anyway, all right, on the intro. So, you got Dave and Rusty and Cousin Rick. So, Cousin Rick, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. How did he drag you out here?
No, I just called and said he wanted to go for a ride in the pickup.
So it was kind of a trick question.
Yeah.
But no, I'm really glad Rick got to come along. Rick's been one on the short list of guests that we were going to have on here, and so it's good to have him on. Even though as we were getting ready for the show, I am getting nervous now because Rick's probably hunting with me more than anybody else in the world.
Get ready with the edit button.
So this may be the most listened to podcast of all time. I don't know.
All the secrets come out. Well, Rick, welcome. Thanks for making the time to come join us. And give us a little just background on yourself.
Oh, I live in Ellensburg. Married my wife, Sydney, and have a couple of boys. And... One works in like structure fire protection, and the other one works in wildland fire.
Wow.
So, lived there, Ellensburg, about 40 years, and I'm a excavation contractor, and just do a little bit of digging and hauling.
I like hauling. And what your son's about to finish the academy, you said, right?
Yeah, Fire Academy, and he graduates on Friday. And
wow,
be a pretty neat deal.
Neat, yeah. Having done that, that's pretty cool. So congratulations, that's pretty neat. Great. All right. So how about your hunting background? What kind of hunting did you do? Do you do? What do you like?
Still like to hunt. Just about everything.
Yeah.
Just about everything. Then some upland bird. Grew up hunting deer with my and elk with my grandfather and my dad, and have raised my kids doing that, and some turkey, deer, and elk, and bear, and
wow,
a little bit of mountain lion, and.
And are you bow hunter, rifle hunter?
I'm a rifle hunter.
Rifle. What kind of rifles are you using?
Christensen Ridgeline.
Oh, and okay.
7 mags, what I'm shooting now.
Okay.
I've been shot a 300 Remington short mag for years, and then just went to this Christensen. It's just something new and different.
New and different. That's right. Very cool. Let's see. Do you hunted with Rusty quite a bit, or have you guys hunted recently?
Not too much Not too much recently. But a long time ago, a lot of different.
We used to hunt a lot. Well, neither one of us were married and had kids.
Yeah,
Was when
makes a big difference.
It was pretty much after college. When I got out of college was when we started hunting together. And I remember the first time was it was your grandfather, my dad's uncles, that kind of took over hunting in the same area your grandfather hunted elk. Mm-hmm. 100 million years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And where they had to winch their way into the place. And now there's a, you know, when my dad started taking me up there, there was a good road in there by that time, Forest Service Road. But yeah, so, and that was kind of where Rick got his first elk up there. And I'd still had never shot an elk. And, but Rick and I were being used as the dogs. by that time, there was a couple of the generation above us that was hunting there, and that had learned from his grandfather, and so they knew where to look for the elk. But if you went over there, you couldn't see the elk because it was too thick and too many trees. But from this side, you could see them, and they learned how to shoot it. Well, since we were the young pups, they would always send us over. Well, go over there and walk the hill this way, and we would chase the elk out so that they could shoot them. Rick and I got tired of that. We went and found our own place. So Rick was with me when I shot my first elk.
Nice.
We paved our own way. Went to a place where Rick had seen some elk. In the past, and so we decided to make a camp. We didn't realize what we were stepping into. We set up an elk camp in the middle of other elk camps that proprietary elk camps. we got baptized by fire on that deal, but we got a camp and we took horses. And
oh, you did! Wow.
Both of us would ride from pretty much the top of the Quillamine, and we would ride all the way to the river and back.
In a day.
Leave
at 4 in the morning in the dark and come ride for an hour in the dark in the morning and.
At least an hour
in the dark coming back. We spent a lot of time hunting in the dark.
We did riding
in the dark
just to get away from everybody else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there wasn't that many people hunting on horses, and so we could get down to where nobody else was, and then Rick and I took us a couple of years before we finally kind of cracked the code down there. Rick climbed the mountain. I slept in the bottom there for about a half an hour while he took his horse, went clear to the top. And then I went up through the bottom because the elk were always where we weren't.
Yeah.
So we decided to divide and conquer. And I actually got ahead of him a little ways. And so I just decided to stop, rest my horse. And I walked up this little drainage and I ran into a lone bull laying down in that drainage.
Really?
All by himself. And that was my first elk ever.
And, kind of a goofy horn.
Oh, he had that.
That was back before the spike rule.
We could shoot anything that had horns.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
and then we packed that thing out. I ended up walking, leading my horse almost the whole way because we had such a load on him. And we got home quite a few hours after dark that night.
Yeah. But it was worth it.
It was. So Rick and I have hunted on horseback quite a bit.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I don't remember whose idea it was when we put in for the, when we put in for the goat tags down at Goat Rocks.
Yeah, we'd talked about that.
And, you know, nobody gets drawed for those, but you still pay your money.
Yeah.
We put in and we got drawed.
Yeah,
and so we took horses up in there and the whole pack and the tents and the whole works, and we went in and set up. Those were some fun trips. I tell you what, we got in there and the first goat we shot in there, Rick and I were laying. We could see him, and I think we were within 200 yards of him. But you couldn't walk from where we were to him.
Yeah, I figured.
And if we shot him and he died right there, we weren't really sure what we were going to do. luckily, we shot him. And he started to die right there on the trail.
Oh.
Of course, we were still young and stupid at that time, and we thought we had really done something fantastic. And then the goat got up. And so both of our rifles were, we'd laid there for hours. Both of our rifles were on the ground because I think we were high-fiving and hooting and hollering. And I reached down and grabbed my rifle, and I shot him in the shoulder as he was leaving because I thought, if he goes around the corner, we'll never know where he goes.
Yeah.
And I knocked him down, and
he rolled.
He rolled.
And rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled.
And we stood up, and we were staring over the cliff, and he was still rolling. We figured, just from looking at the map, didn't we figure 1,500 feet elevation that goat went?
A long ways.
Yeah, it was a long ways. So
I have had more than one ram and goat guy tell me that, you know, and even some bear, like in Alaska on those elevations, tell me, like, part of the putting together the shot is, where's this thing going to go? Because quite often it'll go somewhere where I can't get to it, right? So I've had guys tell me how many shots they haven't taken because, well, it's going to fall wrong. And it's like, oh, yeah, I never even thought of that. So
we've been several in our hunting group have drawn that tag in that area. Mm-hmm. We learned one year where not to shoot one.
Yes, yeah, I never thought of that until some guys pointed it out and was like, yeah, I guess, you know, standing on a ridge, you can't make it go over the side because you can't get down there, right? So,
well, we actually had him on top of a glacier.
Did you?
He was crossing the top of the glacier, and we were at the bottom.
Okay.
And
yeah,
but then he spooked.
He spooked, and then he turned around and come back. We kind of left. We started walking away, and then turned around, and here he was coming back around that rock wall. Well, then, that's a bad spot. And I had, it was your brother.
It was Derek.
Went and ended up shooting that goat. Well, he died on that ledge and didn't fall off.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not into heights, and he started up there and with Derek, and Rusty didn't last very long. He come back down, and
yeah, I think I went at least 10 feet up.
Yeah, it sounded like a good idea, didn't it?
But anyway, Derek, he got up there, and we just had to kind of make a judgment call and say, kick it off. Yeah. And he was stuck on the side of the hill, and there was, of course, no phones or nothing. We didn't have any ropes, or we learned some lessons that day.
Yeah.
Boy, we did, didn't we? Well, and that's where, you know, Rick had had fire training, EMT training and everything. I'd never had any of that stuff. You know, basic CPR is all the only thing I'd been done. So it was really kind of was good that Rick was there, because when he kicked that goat, I mean, and it only slid like 6 inches and then free fell. And that spooked him, and that took the adrenaline out of him. And then all of a sudden, he's got his back to a cliff, and he's looking out over, oh, you could probably see 40 miles from where he was standing, and nothing below him. And he went into shock.
He just froze.
And it got so bad, and Rick kept telling me, he goes, he's in shock. And I'm going, well, what do we do? And Rick goes, well, there's not a lot we can do for you here.
Elevate his feet and give him a blanket.
So. Well, I climbed up a little avalanche chute and just said, okay, take your left hand and move it over 6 inches, and there's a little ledge there, and grab that. And I just kind of crab walked him real slowly back over and got him back over there again. It's like, we won't do that again.
So he didn't know. He wouldn't talk to you at all. He would only talk to me. And then Rick went up that avalanche chute, and I said, hey, Derek, look who's here. He looked over 40 yards, and here's Rick standing in this avalanche chute. And he, well, hi, Rick. And then you talked him off the wall, telling him how to put his hand to get him over there. And then none of us had went down to the goat since he kicked it off. It was still there because we had him stuck on the hill. Derek comes over, and Rick and him come down, and they're just visiting, and I walk over to the goat for the first time. We took pictures. We cleaned that goat all up, got all the blood off, and set it all up and took pictures. And then we slid him down the glacier clear to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then Rick went back to get the horses.
Oh, yeah.
Forgot about the horses. That left me with Derek there. And Derek was really quiet and everything else. And it was, I think I had it almost all the way skinned before Derek finally. And he has no memory of any of it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Completely blocked it out.
So, yeah, that was one of those times when, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And we, it was before cell phones. We didn't have nothing up there. We didn't have a rope. And 5 years later, it's almost 5 years, right on the button. You drew
I got tag the first year, year that oh. they first they went first year that they went to once in a lifetime. I got drawn.
Okay,
right.
And there, that was
and that was a, we took a friend of ours or a friend of Rick's that ropes with him. That was a deputy sheriff at that time.
Okay,
and we took him with us up there on the horses, and there was two beautiful billies, and I mean almost in the exact place where my brother had shot. And the guy with us goes, "Don't you think we should go sneak on those?" Nope.
Nope.
Why do you think
safe.
He's there?
They're safe.
Rick and I wouldn't even look at him. Yeah. We just looked off the other way. Just kept going. Two goats laying right there.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Fun times.
Yeah. It was a fun time.
Well, it's amazing to me, Boy Scout leader. In my day job, you know, we teach human factors, why people do what they do and try to prevent error chains and all that. But the outdoors is a laboratory of every time you go out, something goes sideways or you forgot a piece of equipment. You know, like we were joking about redundancy, you know, it's not that I was so smart I should carry two. It's I've been burned before. So And you know, I remember when I got sort of voluntold to do Boy Scouts, right? It was a, you know, this isn't, most people join Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts. Cub Scouts is a little bit of a intro to stuff to see what you might like. But Boy Scouts is a leadership thing, and the outdoors is the laboratory where things fail, right? Whether they get wet or cold or whatever. And they don't put that in a brochure. This is like, if you like the outdoors and like the camp, you know, you might love it. And you try to draw in kids that maybe don't like to hike or don't like to do that and expose them. And what we quickly realized as adults was this is a living laboratory, and it's nothing but failures. Doesn't matter what you plan for. That you realize you need rope or you know, the parents showed up in a Tesla and you're like, okay, so we can't drive where we're going in a Tesla. Like, I guess I should have been more clear. I assumed you guys knew what I was talking about. And so as we teach leadership and the kids learn to, okay, Billy's going to bring the stove, but let's have Charlie bring a stove and fuel also because your stuff could break or you might forget it, right? And so we're teaching all that. But it doesn't matter how many times we've done it. Every time I go to the Tiano Way or something like that, right, find out your turkey call sitting back at the truck or just something. And so, you know, you end up carrying rope around. You don't know why you're going to need it. You don't know if you're going to need it, but you know you probably should have it with you rather than back at the truck, right? And it's just, that's one of the neat things, but based on what you guys did, right, that's, that just comes out every time I see, you know, something advertised at REI or whatever. You're like, okay, outdoors is a laboratory, things fail, equipment breaks, you know. You can't just, we had joked before, Rusty, the buddies that, you know, all year long want to go hunt, so we went up to Tenasket with one of my buddies. As he's pulling the scope out of the box and sticking it on the rail, and I'm like, wait a minute, and like stuff hasn't been sighted in or any, like there's some preparation involved here. And it's just funny how if you don't do this kind of stuff or you don't make these mistakes that you don't realize what goes into a simple outing, right? Oh, yeah. So that there was a video of an Alaska bear hunt, and they shot it at elevation, and it rolled something like 2,000 feet and ended up at their feet. And it was one of these, like, did you guys choreograph it? And they just looked at each other like, I mean, I can't believe it worked out that way. We thought we had a huge hike the rest of the night involved and stuff. So, yeah, it's just pretty neat. Well, that's really cool. Yeah. You guys can hunt like that and stuff.
It is. As he was talking there, the when you bent your scope came into mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we're in a bad place. Yeah. There was no way we're going to get a new scope.
Yeah, it doesn't happen two steps away from the truck, right? It's at the 17 mile mark, something comes apart on you.
They're taking you, bend the scope back, and you shoot it at a rock, and it was right, and so it still worked. It shouldn't have worked.
No, it shouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
It's not one of those things you're going to go, okay, well, if this happens, you can't. No, you don't ever say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're crawling along the crest trail to another spot there, and he drops his rifle, falls off his shoulder, off the sling, and it goes down a little avalanche chute, and he dives after it. And, I mean, it's 2,000 feet to the bottom.
Well, not to the bottom of the chute.
Depends what kind of rifle
least,
it was.
At least 10 feet to the bottom.
Yeah, It's like, let the gun go, dude.
No way, man. I spent, like, a year's wages on that gun.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I saved up for that gun, and
then you get to the bottom, and there's another gun, and another gun down there. This is obviously the place where people trip, right?
To this day, there's a big scar right on that front, you know, on the forearm there, and I won't fix it.
Yeah, tells a tale,
because
right?
Because that's a story that, well, first of all, I'm scared of heights, and so that tells you how important the rifle was. I don't think I'd have went after a horse going down that thing. That was an interesting.
So we did the goats, and we hunted deer and elk and deer up there, up on their ground there quite a bit for a lot of years.
Yeah, you shot your first deer up there.
My first deer up there, and my kids got their first deer in that area too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, right across the fence, right at the neighbor's place. Perfect. Well, now you've actually went turkey hunting.
Yeah, I've been turkey hunting.
We've talked about it 100,000 times, but I've never went. So you've taken the boys and turkey.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of them, but they're pretty darn tough. I haven't been super successful. My kids have been way more successful than me.
They're sneaky little guys, right? Yeah, something with a brain the size of a pea, and it just outsmarts me at every turn, right? It knows that my ability with the bow is a 35-yard shot dialed in all day, every day. So they hang out at 38 yards knowing I'm not going to take the shot. And they'll run back and forth like we're still out of his range, and you can hear them talking to each other. And it's, I don't know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you put kids in a blind when they're pretty young, and they can have some pretty good naps, and they can get pretty excited. Mm-hmm. The turkey's coming in around the blind there, and you can hear their breathing,
mm-hmm. little drumming
is going up and up and up, and the kids anyway.
Yeah,
pretty fun.
Yeah, I've had turn my kids loose with the box call, you know, no training, just rap, 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 and all of a sudden, like, oh, geez, right there. Yeah. Hang on a second, get ready. So, it's a lot of fun.
Court still gets at least one, if not two turkeys every year.
He gets usually one a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Court's the big time hunter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Everything comes easy to Kyle, it seems like. Kyle's good at everything.
There you go. They've got, so they're similar to a whitetail. So if you like whitetail stuff, I think you'd like turkey hunting. They don't have the sense of smell, but they've got the eyesight. And then they've got the eyesight, and they have like a Alzheimer's brain, right? They'll take off running, and they forget what they're running for. They stop and come back. So you can bust up flocks. And they'll panic and disperse, and then all of a sudden you see them going like, what are we running for? And then they'll turn around and come back. So they have a lot of neat little quirks, and then if you use the decoys and they start beating on your decoy. And I do a lot of training back in Ohio. That's where my day job's company headquarters is. And so, you know, it's much more popular out there than it is out here. And they've got these neat stores that are Field and Stream has their own stores. They're part of the Dick's Sporting Goods chain and whatnot. And so the ones out there are usually nothing but turkey and whitetail when you go out there. And so, you know, you can find people in the store that actually turkey hunt. And they were showing me the, you know, $200 Brand X, beautiful look, you know, looks like out of National Geographic turkey decoy, and they're like, you don't want that one because turkeys will pick their fights, right? They want to fight something they know they can beat. So you need more of a turkey looks more like a rubber chicken, looks deformed, looks like it has issues. Put that out, and the turkeys will take the challenge and come down. So if your decoy is too nice, the turkeys may turn away and go, I don't think I want that fight today. So when we started going with a little more wrong proportions, looked a little goofy, we had more options, right? The turkeys started coming in. So it's just pretty funny, but it's a lot of fun. I like to take the feathers and tie flies and go salmon fishing stuff. So it's cool. A whole thing for
now.
Me.
Do you roast them?
Ones that I've had, I have a smokehouse that I built for salmon and stuff, right. But smoke the turkeys.
And do you grind it or
no? Smoke it out. Yeah, huh. It's the amount of times I have knocked an arrow. I mean, I'm doing it with a bow, right? So the amount of times I've knocked an arrow on a turkey is very rare. You just the parameters have to be perfect for that shot, right? And then the shotgun with the turkey load and the turkey choke's a lot more effective. It'll get you out further, but I don't know, just something about the bow. And in this state, you can't use the decapitation kind of blades and stuff, right, because the head's got to be intact. So it's just a regular, you know, small broadhead and take the turkeys that way. So you see the guys down in the south will use the guillotine blade. Looks like a mechanical broadhead that's open already, and you know, ideas that do a headshot and take the head right off, which is an interesting way to do it. But for this state, it's got to stay intact. So
really,
So you just draw a line up the leg, right where the wing intersection is, and that's your spot for the arrow. Huh. So the amount of times I've released an arrow on one is very rare. The amount of times I've gotten very close, you know, very often, but just I need them to come in a little bit further and. I swear they have a safety meeting every morning that, hey, the guy in the Toyota's back. Everybody be careful. Because you're like, how do they know? How do they know what my range is? So, yeah, it's pretty funny. But and I like to hunt from the ground blind. I'll do a little bit of the run and gun with the bow. But the ground blind's just kind of neat because you get in it and the woods go quiet really quickly. And things start happening again and they forget you're there. And it's... I mean, I've seen bear and elk and all kinds of stuff while I'm in the blind for turkeys and
it's
stuff.
Good,
so,
good yeah, it's pretty blind, cool. Good in the blind for kids,
yeah,
because they got a lot of movement.
They can wiggle.
Don't want to sit still very good.
And it does break down the scent a little bit. I've noticed with deer, it broke down the scent, and deer got a lot closer, and elk got a lot closer. And then, you know, if it starts to rain a little bit, they give you some protection, so you can sit in that thing all day and yeah, it's pretty neat. So I just, I don't know. I like it. It's kind of fun.
Were the boys turkey in today?
No.
Yeah. Well, Kyle's, I guess.
Kyle's in the academy thing. Academy but still. But Court will go, I think he was talking about going later in the season after everything kind of settled down and stuff kind of gets dispersed a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's usually what we've done is dates in May. It's usually April 15th through the end of May for adults. And usually later in May, you know, all the guys that are out, you know, just calling for the sake of calling and everything are kind of gone by then.
Yeah, and I was talking to Dwayne,
You
know, England about it, Fish Hunt Northwest, and because he loves that. He loves that going turkey hunting. Mm-hmm. And he was saying the same thing that you guys were saying, you know, stay away for that first day or two and let everybody kind of warm them up, push them out a little bit.
Yeah, some of the youth seasons, you know, when they open usually like a week earlier, usually, and those are pretty good to get kids out.
So the youth season must already be open.
It is. It opened on the 1st, I believe it was. And the, you know, Eric, I think, commented the other day on his Facebook thing. I mean, the numbers are up. There's more turkeys around. It looked like a better year for them. So, yeah, the pictures definitely showed that. But
because I've seen quite a few kids. Turkey pictures here in the last week or two. So it must open last weekend?
Yeah, I think it opened on the 1st. I think early. It was, yeah. Okay. Yeah, usually a week early. But you know, they've got interesting patterns, right? They're all bunched up, and then, you know, they'll kick kind of the lesser male adults out. Yeah. And so now they're on patrol looking for the lone female that maybe didn't get bred or something like that. So... Yeah, it's just, I think the duck guys do the same thing. There are certain calls, like a feeding call or whatever, and you're, you know, you have to have the right call for the right situation. Right. And so the first week is everybody's out there burp, 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 and gobbling. And, you know, you're like, okay, there's hunters calling each other in on hunters, basically. I've literally sat on a ridge up in the Tianaway and watched this hunter gobble and this guy start sneaking. And you're like, no, you know, hey, there's a guy. You're like, oh my gosh, I see how this is going to play out. And this guy's getting excited, and you can literally see this accident unfolding, and you're like, "Oh, I better yell something or whatever." So it happens a lot. But
well, Rick and I have hunted together long enough that we were the kids.
Yeah,
you know, we were the 10, the 20 somethings when we were
kids, cool. And then there was the old gray haired fat guys.
There was the old gray haired fat guys. Yeah, and we made fun of all the group old gray haired fat guys. Now we resemble the old gray haired
fat guys. When did that happen?
So, but you know. I remember, you know, talking to Dad then, but you kind of take it for granted. You just kind of, you know, he's going, it's just so great. You know, I remember the deer hunt back in Montana when we all drew and went back there.
Oh.
You know, and Dad and his buddy and Jerry were the old gray-haired fat guys, and we were the kids running around there, and they just loved watching us and hunting with us and doing everything. And man, as soon as we had kids and they started getting up to where they were hunting, you and me quit shooting things. We sit and watch, and we take those kids out, and it's just so much fun just paying attention to all of that and seeing it and seeing the look on their face when they get something and everything. That is really that's the priceless stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, in the South, when I was a kid in the 70s, there was more of a hunting club culture, right? So everybody met, picture like a longhouse, there was a cafeteria and somebody made food, and then you all disperse on all the land that the club owned. And they hunted with dogs and stuff, so I got to see hounds work and, you know, tree stands and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that culture's not really here where you have a club that you belong to and everybody meets for breakfast and there's a skin and pole and just all that kind of stuff. And then up in Pennsylvania, that area, right, people had hunting cabins. That was when the seasons went. Everybody made their way up to there. So it was a neat social thing around it that is almost kind of lost here unless you force it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not quite the same. It's more public land, more solo stuff. I have a neat schedule where I can spend some time in the woods, but none of my buddies have that schedule. Yeah. So I do a lot of stuff off the grid by myself because everybody else is working. So, but I wanted to ask, since you guys did horse stuff, I think people would be interested to know, do you have to get your horse accustomed to gunshots? What's all that stuff like? Never thought about it, but when you mentioned it, I can't imagine you spring that on a horse without training them.
Gunshot, that it can be a challenge at times. So it can be, I can remember hunting up in the wheat fields one time, and I think he shot at a deer, and we turned around and looked for the horses, and they were half a mile across there. We had to go get them.
I was wondering if that would be a thing.
So we learned, okay, you get off and shoot, I'll hold your horse.
Okay. See, I wouldn't have thought of that until I saw it in action. Yeah. That makes sense.
Sometimes it just kind of worked out that way, but for the most part, it was pretty good. We didn't really have too many. We had a few trials and tribulations with livestock, but
yeah.
Well, I remember elk hunting. I had to call you because I lost my horse.
Oh,
yeah.
I had tied it up. I went up to. I took my horse for what? I remember why we weren't together. I don't remember
you,
why.
You just went. It was kind of after we just kind of started using the horses, and then you went and.
Because I went up there, and I went up to where, you know, your grandpa hunted. And we went up there, and we put I rode out, but I could only ride so far to where those guys sat. Mm. And then I just tied him to a tree or a bush, and I went down and sat with him for about, we just sat down there and hunted for, you know, I just sat there with him for an hour or two, turned around, and my horse was gone.
Oh my gosh, that seems like a horrible feeling.
So I go back up, hoping that he walked back to the trailer. And he didn't.
So he called me like that night, and he says, "Hey, can you bring a horse up there? A couple of horses. I lost my horse." And it's like, how'd you lose your horse?
Oh my gosh, that seems like a horrible feeling.
So I think we rode all day one day and didn't
find him.
Really,
and
a I think whole this, day.
Yeah, and went, it's second day. I think we
rode half an hour.
And I said, "I bet you by about this time that." if somebody would find that horse, you'd buy him a big steak dinner. And he says, yeah, I sure would. And I said, well, there's your horse.
You got to be careful when, you know, who you're hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about if you're overnight out there with your horses? Like, what about predators and stuff like that? Do you have to do anything, at least in Washington?
The only time I really think that we... The only story that comes to mind with the horses was the first time we went goat hunting, and we were up in McCall Basin, mm-hmm. and it was all we were up above timberline, so we were camping right in the last trees, so it's all rocks, you know, you're up in the cliffs and everything else, yeah. and we couldn't see the storm coming because we're on the east side, and when that storm came over, it was a thunderstorm,
lightning,
wow,
and so. You could see it coming, you know, and so we put out the fire and we crawled in the tent because we don't know if it's going to be hail or what, and the horses are high-lined, and so we crawl in the tent. And if you had your eyes open, it was worse because the lightning would go off and then
light the whole basin up.
And so, I don't know, we were probably 20 minutes into the storm. We weren't talking much because it was just a rumbling.
It was
kind of scary because we have no. Is there rocks rolling down? We don't.
Yeah, we're in the only trees in the whole area. So in lightning storm.
It's like this is probably not the best place to be hanging out. But it's raining and everything. Well, all of a sudden the horses
were raising heck.
They were raising heck and they were making a lot of noise and they were. Stomping and everything else. I remember neither of us was talking. We're just laying there in the tent. Finally, I go, I think that's your horse. He goes, it's not my horse. It is your horse. And I says, well, why don't you go check and then tell me whether it's my horse. Because neither one of us wanted
If they live, they live. They die, they die.
They die, they die. And we didn't know if a tree was going to come down on us.
We didn't know if we had a bear in there on the meat, yeah. on yeah. meat or what. But
because it was the night after we shot the goat, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. So you got something that's giving off the smell, right? So yeah.
All those things that you know
they teach you not to do.
Prepared for. Yeah. we went goat hunting at least twice without a rope before we realized we needed one. Mm-hmm. Oh, my word. And then we went up. I've been up there in McCall Basin when we got a foot of snow. And the tent was right down on my nose.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And you're having to, you're knocking snow off and it doesn't fall mm-hmm. because it's all slid.
Doesn't go anywhere, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. So,
oh, my gosh.
That is a beautiful place up there.
It sure is.
So, yeah, we've also tried elk hunting in a new area.
Oh, yeah?
And, we had a guy come and threaten us with a rifle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to one of those proprietary elk areas.
That's unique.
We just showed up and getting the horses out, getting them packed and brushing them off and everything.
Yeah, that was like, I don't know if they were, they weren't happy about horses being in that. It was a horse camp that we were at.
Yeah.
Where you park horse trailers and stuff, but there was people in there. I don't know if they're anti hunters or what, but it was not cool.
And he showed up. And so first he came over and was just nice and talked to us. And we just kept about our business and we were cordial. We were busy. We got a lot of stuff to do. We got packs to tie up and put up and then he left, and the other pickup showed up. I think that's probably what set him off.
Oh, okay.
Was he showed up, it was Derek again, and they showed up, and we were ready to start throwing their gear on the horses, and that guy shows up with a rifle. And it was like, well, what are you bringing a rifle for?
Yeah, that's weird.
And then, so then... Derek decided to show the guy that was carrying the rifle his pistol, and that's when Rick and I were like going, we're not doing this today.
Bad situation. So we just got our stuff loaded up and got the heck out of there.
Yeah. We just loaded up and took off down the trail.
Yeah.
And,
We
didn't know if we were going to have tires or
windows exactly
or
right.
what was going to happen when we got
back. It's the only time I've ever experience I've ever had like that. It was just kind of real strange.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the one I remember too. I don't think I've ever been in another one like
situation
that.
Like that.
Yeah, I haven't had a hunting one like that. I've seen there's been a couple instances lately of an outfitter on public property deciding he owns everything and running people off, which has gotten people in trouble. And then there was that fishing guide went viral here recently, where he was running some kids off, right, and claimed he owned everything. The only stuff that I've run into, I mean, a pistol is good for four-legged predators, but it's good for two-legged predators too, right? I've only run into stuff off the grid, steelhead stuff up in Forks and all that, when you stumble across a camp that's being used for some sort of drug thing, right? They're running chemicals into the water, and they've got, you know, you're like, ooh, there's like a full-on production facility going on here.
Well, we hunted
that's come up fishing.
Has it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we hunted up there, our elk camp. Speaking of proprietary elk camps. but we'd been in that camp for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And one night, I don't even remember how the conversation went, but we decided, why are we riding an hour to 2 hours in the dark when there's other guys that are hunting right here by the camp? Why don't we stay one day and let's see what it looks like up here when it's daylight? And we weren't even on our horses, and the guys started shooting. We heard shots just in the canyon right in front of camp. And so Rick and I walk over there, and there's elk running everywhere. And Rick shoots this elk across the canyon. And, you know, as in our partnership of hunting all those years, Rusty, you run over there. And so I would go over there, and he would stay on this side and direct me. And we got that elk down. Well, then we decided after that, why are we riding clear to the... Why don't we just sit here and
shoot that canyon?
Yeah.
Well, boy, did we tick off the other camp right next to us.
Yeah,
boy.
a couple after 2 or 3 years of us being successful right there, we walked opening morning down to our normal spot that we sit, and there's a guy sitting there. What you doing? No, I'm just hungry. Are you going to shoot over there? No, it's too far. I'm not going to shoot over there. It's like, okay. So I think we just went down the hill about another 50 or 75 yards and got another one that year. So,
And then the next year we came back. Remember, there was a target over there. And those guys had come down in the summer and practiced.
Practicing.
And so they weren't. We didn't go away just because they were sitting there.
That was before rangefinders and all that stuff, too. That was just like, how far do you think that is?
So well, and
we're dating ourselves now, too. So.
Oh, yeah, we are, aren't we? But we we hunted together so much, one would call the shot. And we knew
cool
what
setup.
We were doing across that canyon. And so when those bulls were running all over that morning, it was just that day. But it was just
pretty amazing.
But there was bulls everywhere, guys running all over. And so Rick just picked out I think there was a down tree, and we just laid down by the tree.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay. Oh, we saw that big bull. That's what it was. And so but by the time we got you set up, he'd laid down, and we couldn't tell if it was the bull or not.
Yeah.
And so you were watching it. And
it was so you're going to be greedy? We're going to be greedy and wait for that one and not get nothing, or are we going to go for the one over here? So,
decisions, right? Oh, my gosh. Those are great stories.
So, So Rick, I said, well, there's a raghorn coming down the hill. And he goes, okay, where's he at? I said, if you just pull to the right a little ways on that trail right behind the one you're looking at, he's going to be walking right on that trail. And you just busted him right there on the trail. And
that sounds like fun. So, what a great way to do it.
And then... I got over there, and the bull got up, and it was above the little trail and everything. It was perfect where you'd knocked him down. And I got over there and bumped him, and I didn't get him shot when he was laying on the ground, and he jumped up.
He went below.
Went below the road.
That's a bad spot.
And Rick's going, why did you let him go below the road? That really wasn't the plan.
Okay? Yeah. I know what I was trying
I had to
do.
Improvise.
Oh my God. Well, we had the horses and the mules there, and then... local game warden come along one day, and said, hey, there's a couple old timers shot an elk in the bottom of the canyon there. Do you think you could go help them? It's like, oh, okay. So we took a horse and a mule and went down there and quartered up their elk. And it's that game warden says, those guys will never get it out of there. But
yeah,
we went down there and quartered it up. And they were, those two old guys were tickled pink.
Oh, boy,
they
were. That's pretty cool. Were, see, those are the great stories. Yeah.
But we also were sitting there one time in camp. I think we were having lunch. You and me had sat all morning and had seen. We'd come back just to the camp to have lunch. And we had seen those guys shoot that elk on the road, remember? It came off the top of the ridge, off the road, the ridge that the road on it. And they had gut shot a bull. And it went to the bottom. And they ended up shooting it or whatever. And Rick and I watched the whole thing from where we were sitting. And those guys went down and they cut the head off that bull and brought the head out. And it was just a spike, I think. I don't even think it was a big bull at all.
Yeah, it wasn't.
And, as we're sitting there having our lunch, the game warden comes driving up on a four-wheeler. And, you know, he's sitting there talking to us, and we knew him from the other years when he had us do other stuff. And all of a sudden, those guys come walking up with the elk on his, and all they had was the head. Yeah, he wasn't really happy good. With those guys.
They went and gotten the rest of it, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. The plan changed.
They did not like that at all. But we had another little medical emergency I didn't even think about.
What'd you have?
Going down the creek.
Same canyon.
And Rick and I were sitting in our spot, and some elk come feeding up the canyon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we went and ended up shooting the bull.
Yeah.
Just a spike.
Yeah. The fog was rolling in.
And the fog was rolling in and out. So I set up on the hill, and he went down the bottom as normal.
As normal.
And he walked up the canyon. Well, he got up to where the fog was, and I could see him. And it's like, where's the elk? Well, wasn't there. So we went back down through the fog and ended up jumping him. And
yeah. We shot him, killed him. And then went back to get the horses.
I went for horses and mules.
And you said, and I said, okay, I'll gut him and start cutting him up and getting ready for the pack boxes. Mm-hmm. And
so I went back up and got two riding horses and a mule and went back down in there. And I get down there and I heard a shot about the time when I was going down the hill. It was really close in there someplace.
Oh, okay.
And I get down to where he is and he's covered in blood.
Oh.
And the elk is not butchered.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he doesn't hardly have the guts out, I don't think.
No, I didn't have the guts out.
And I said, are you okay? He said, yeah, just somebody shoot you? No, I'm fine. But he says, I just didn't feel good. And he passed out into that thing. Well, we thought at the time, we'd been living on Halloween candy and working our butts off, so we weren't.
Sounds normal.
Yeah, we just assumed that I was, you know, low sugar or
something. And you know. So I ended up finished gutting it and quartered
you
it all
pretty
up.
Pretty much did everything. I mean, I remember
loaded all up, and he got him on the horse, and we got up out of there, and then I think he went home shortly after that and had a.
I think I stayed. We got that elk out and hanging, and then I stayed another night, I think. But I could never get my energy back, and so I ended up getting home. And without going into all the great details, I ended up calling my mother, you know, because I lived on the ranch at that time. So I called down to their house and said, you know, I can't hardly move. I can't hardly get around. And I says, and there's just some. There's some weird things happening here. She comes up and she goes, you're bleeding internally.
Mm.
And I went, what? And she took me down to the hospital and we got down. She drove down to Wenatchee and I ended up having an ulcer in my small intestine.
Oh, yeah.
And that every time I would eat something, it would go to bleeding. And I would just, you know,
yikes.
Blood. Just blood all over every time. And so, 3 days later, after they figure it out, and they're trying to figure out where it is, and mm-hmm. they finally have got it, you know, it's in the small intestine that we can't get in and look at.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so we're going to have to cut you open to go in. And so I ended up with a 14-inch scar down my belly.
Mm. So the elk bit back. Interesting.
We've narrowed it down to two things. Mm-hmm. We would always stop at the mini mart there in Kittitas and buy chicken, and buy a whole bunch of chicken and take it in. And that was what we lived on. Besides that, Halloween candy,
In your beanie weenies.
Oh yeah, yeah, and my Denny Moore stew.
Oh, Denny Moore beef stew. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, Rick to this day. Rick cannot look at a can of Denny Moore stew because
he'd wake up in the morning and open it up and eat it cold.
Yeah, you could do that.
Rick's going, no. We don't eat Denny Moore stew.
Well, now think about all the Mountain House. And just, I mean, holy cow, are we spoiled with what we, you know. Okay. I think I'll have the apple turnover crisp for breakfast. Or, you know, remember eating military rations or, you know, whatever you had just to make it work.
Our pockets were stuffed with Halloween candy, too, the whole time, too. So.
Keep you going, yeah.
Well, I remember the time that we, before we learned that you had to have a sandwich box to put your sandwich in, we threw our sandwiches in the saddlebags, and 6 hours later, we decided that we weren't going to eat these sandwiches that tasted like the inside of a saddlebag.
Yeah, leathery.
It didn't matter that plastic bag it was in. Yeah. It didn't know.
Yeah, it's not fooling anybody.
So, yeah, that's when I pulled out the old can of Denny Moore
stew.
There
you go.
Rick goes, no, I'm not that hungry.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that anymore.
Yeah, so.
It's kind of like sleeping in the truck. I don't know how many times I slept in the truck, but I did it like a couple years ago for a tuna trip, and I'm like, I don't think I could do this ever again. I woke up like a pretzel, like, how the heck was I doing this all the time? I need a bed.
Yeah.
So, well, hey, we've got some new products that we're working with, and you've been testing them.
With you, didn't
yeah,
you?
So the first one I have is, I don't know, I call it a bow stand. So I'm doing some bow shooting from the blind, right? So this is made by True Glow, the guys that make some of those sights and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But this is like in the $12 to $15 range. This is just the standard size. I also have a mini, so I think if you did, I've seen guys do two of these on a crossbow and it'll stand up. But if you had maybe a female size bow, maybe the mini would work. But this is a standard size. The idea is just so it can stand up while you're sitting in the blind. And so instead of laying on the ground or having to hold it in your lap or something. So for $12, I mean, not too bad.
Absolutely.
They do make three-legged ones, so your cam's not in the dirt. And I'm not kicking up dust. I'm just sitting in there. But they are considerably more expensive.
Yeah,
but,
anyway. And those three-legged ones, doesn't it fits on it? I think I've seen the guys that have come.
Yeah, they're like brand-specific.
And they go right to your stabilizer.
Yeah, yeah, they can go on the stabilizer off of that, or whatever. Yeah, this is sort of a one-size-fits-all, spring-loaded, so as long as it's got tension on it. But anyway,
won't affect your shooting, I don't think.
No, you can pick it up and shoot with it. And doesn't bother anything. So anyway, just something to keep it from laying in the dirt or whatever, which is what I used to do. So anyway, but I'm interested in, I saw your video on this Landmaster. Tell me about how that's going. That thing's pretty cool.
They did put the video up.
Yeah.
I told you, I think I mentioned it last podcast, that we went to up there to the INWC show in Spokane. And the Ought-Not guys, dealer there in Spokane, had brought some electric side-by-sides. And so we were sitting there talking about it, and I was just killing some time and waiting. I was trying to pick up Charlie's deer head and bring it home because we put it in the bighorn deal. And so anyway,
and he won a buckle, right?
Yeah, and he did.
Buckle.
He did win.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, but anyway, I'm killing time, and I'm just wandering around. I was like the only guy there because Gonzaga basketball that night. And so we talked for like an hour, and these guys were just dead certain that if they sent me home with a or brought me out an electric side-by-side, that we would buy it.
So you've been running Polaris gas stuff at your farm.
I run. All I have is a couple of Rangers that I run on the ranch. But, the neighbors that you hunt with, they've got Can-Ams now, and they've got a couple different side-by-sides, some really nice ones. My brother's they got the touring ones, the RZRs, and they run those all over. So, and we've got a Can-Am Defender that we use for spraying roadsides and different things, and that's what we use it for. So we're familiar with them. Mm-hmm. And I told those guys that. They knew all that before they brought it out. So the cool thing was they brought this out. It's all American made, which that kind of turns me on just a little bit. I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I like that. And so I thought, okay, well, that's a good thing. They bring it out. You know, you look at the parts, you look at the stuff, you know, it always looks good on the showroom floor. Mm-hmm. But they brought it out and we went through everything with it. One thing about electric motors is the torque is unbelievable.
It's kind of instant.
Yeah, if you can sit in the seat, it'll go, you know. The first thing that I did was I set the emergency brake and was putting stuff in the back, and I just jumped on. And the Polaris's have a you know, you push on the gas with the emergency brake on, it shuts the gas off.
Oh.
And so it sits there and just won't run. Mm-hmm. And you just go, oh, it's the brake. And so you hit turn on the brake. This one here doesn't have anything like that. And it has so much torque that you can pull that brake on as tight as you want and you can drive off. So you're going to start a fire. You're going to, you know, for me, I went just around the corner and I heard it start squealing and I realized it was the brake. And so I reached up and turned the brake off and then everything went. But it impresses me. The torque in that thing is unbelievable. It has a lot of torque.
And is it the AMP?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it here. 20,000, call it 21,000 is what's listed on here.
Yeah.
1750 going capacity.
And this one
was
the ranch edition.
Yeah, so, I was going to say you get a couple little extras.
Yeah,
there.
When you go to the ranch edition, you get the light package, you get a winch on the front, you get a bigger box. Because they make the ranch, they make the Landmasters. You can get them either in a single seat or a two seat. Mm-hmm. But the ranch edition, they don't put the second seat in, and so they put a bigger box in.
Yeah, the bed kind of covers over it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it's a big metal box, and that's huge. And that's cool.
It's saying that box has 1,000 pounds.
1,000 pounds, wow. And it's a lot of floor loading. Electric. The box is all electric. Mm-hmm. There's no. You don't grab it and dump it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's just a button.
That's cool.
That is. It's way cool.
Yeah. So go out to the YouTube channel and take a look. But
yeah, you're going to want to look at it. Should I give the spoiler at the end of what my recommendation is? Or
I don't know. Do you need to drive it more, or are you pretty much good to go?
Oh, no. They've already came and got it.
Oh, they did.
So the thing is we didn't buy it. Mm-hmm. We like the construction of it. We like that it's American-made. Mm-hmm. It is way cool that it's quiet.
Because that'd be really neat.
It's really quiet.
Well, that's what I picked up off the video you hear your tools rattling around, which you don't have with a gas one.
And that's why I drove it with the microphone. Mm-hmm. I thought, I got to drive this thing so people can realize.
Yeah.
Because all you hear is the little bit of window that was vibrating and the box.
Yeah.
You don't hear anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking just like I am now.
Yeah, just in a regular voice.
I'm just talking along and driving along and... And it'll do 30, 35 miles an hour, so it's not a speed demon. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it'll climb anything that the tires that you can keep traction because it's got unbelievable torque. It's great for that. If our biggest problem was we took it, put a sprayer on it, and we were going to spray roadsides with it. And we went out and sprayed one roadside, which a tank usually runs between 40 to 45 minutes.
Okay.
That takes us to run a tank out.
How big is that? Was that tank?
That's a 60
I remember
gallon.
The size. I was going to guess 60.
So it's fairly heavy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it squatted a little
10
bit.
10 pounds
actually,
a gallon.
I think I think the Landmaster was better than the Defender when it came to squatting. Mm-hmm. But the Defender is longer, you know. So, you know, I don't know. But it handled it. It handled it just fine.
Okay.
So we ran it for... We had actually, everybody jumped on it. Of course, you know, it's a new toy. So everybody jumped on it and ran around and climbed this and drove around, went up behind the grain bins and did everything around the ranch there. And so it was probably down to about a 3/4 on the motor. And there's a nice gauge. It's in 10th of an hour.
Oh, okay.
Or 10th of a charge.
Okay.
And so you could just watch them. You could see where you're at. Threw the tank on, mixed up the tank, went out, sprayed the first load. And it was beeping at us. saying you need to charge us up.
And that's on that second battery for accessories, right? Or is that on the main?
No, that's on the main
battery.
That was
on the main, okay.
But now the accessory battery is completely different.
How did that work with the lights and all the other stuff that lasted?
I like that. And the lights on that thing are all LED.
Yeah, yeah.
Super bright. I saw that. That they have a really good light package on it. It's got a, you know, the diamond plate top. The electric bed, the winch, all that stuff works really well.
But running the sprayer hit the battery pretty good, huh?
Well, but see, the sprayer is just a 12-volt.
That's pump. What I'm trying to think.
And we put in on the alternate battery.
Okay.
So it did not have anything to do with the drive battery.
Okay.
So it didn't. It wouldn't have made any difference on the range.
Gotcha.
And we ran out of juice. We could not do two tanks. So we plugged it in, we charged it up, we ran the next tank, and we were down about a third. We only had a third of a battery left. So we couldn't have done a second tank. At first, it kind of bothered me. I'm thinking, we're doing something wrong. Or
leaving that's something what I'm wondering. What's on?
And so we charged it up, tried to do it again, and that's when we realized. And one of my brothers figured it out first. He goes, well, you know, this thing will do as a 50-mile range. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's best conditions. We understand that. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll only do 30, 32 miles an hour. Well, how long, if you're going to go 50 miles and you're running, you can only run an hour and a half.
So it's a time over distance deal, not a battery deal.
It's not a battery deal. It's that time dish, that time
interesting.
Issue. And so it won't work for our application. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. And those that I, you know, and I haven't talked to any of those that work, but I talked to enough of the, you know, the guy that delivered it, the mechanic and the salesman. And I said, well, these other ranches that are doing it, you know, I says, well, and they go, well, you know, they'll run all day. And I says, well, running all day at what? You know, and he goes, well, they'll haul hay out and feed the horses. They'll
a lot of stop and go.
They'll take the doing this, but it's a lot of stop and go.
Low speed.
And it's all 3 or 4 minutes, five minutes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if we were running around the ranch or even when I put putting the pheasants out for the guys, you know, I'll haul the it'll be on the trailer. I'll pull up there. The pheasants are loaded. We unload it. You know, I drive it off the trailer and I go out and 15 minutes later, I'm back.
Okay. So and distance on the trailer. Is the barrier.
I can
right
run
now.
It 6-8 times. Mm-hmm. I could probably run it all day and put out all my birds and do all the groups and get everybody going and then just plug it in at night. You know,
okay, good to know.
So it was just our application. I think for other
you've got
applications,
long stretches that you're spraying.
Let's put it this way: if I was putting out decoys and I was running all that, this would be the thing to have in the trailer because it's super quiet.
Yeah, no fumes and just
and you know you put it running it in the shop and there's no fumes. Running around the lake and you know we got the reservoirs full right now and so I was running around the reservoir there and the birds don't even fly.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just quiet, you know.
Okay, good to know.
And everything. So, very, very well built machine. Got to give them, you know, 5 stars on that. Mm-hmm. For us and our application, it just isn't gonna cut it.
On the batteries, does it have like an all battery one, battery two switch? Can you select batteries?
You have a high and a low.
High and a low.
But all that does is basically gears you down to where you can't go 30 miles an hour.
So there could be a mod at some point where you could select a second or whatever battery and do some things. Okay.
The battery box is not full.
That's what I was wondering.
The battery that's in there is 150 pounds. It's a lithium battery.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's 1,500.
So you could rig it if you needed it to, but it'd be more expense. But
technology is going to catch up.
Yeah.
We all know that. We've all seen that with the electric cars. And
cool idea, though.
So. But like I said,
for a lot of smaller mom and pop farms would be a great thing.
Well, it'd save on gas, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Or having to have gas up there, you know.
Yeah.
I always wondered how the heck do you fuel your stuff where you
I think if you had a 20-acre farm, you could run it all day.
Yeah.
Just doing your chores and plug it in at night and you're good to go.
But if you're doing the distance like what you're doing is it's a different deal.
Because we do that 45-minute straight run that you don't need to shut it off. You're running the whole entire time.
Mm-hmm.
That's just too much.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good to know. Yeah, that's good feedback for them too.
It's very, very cool. And if you do go on the YouTube channel, I go over the entire thing.
It's pretty good.
We
pretty
go
thorough.
Underneath and we go on top and I hate the ones I guess I like the ones that are only 5-6 minutes long, but then I have like 50 questions when it's over because, well, you didn't show me this. Well, you didn't do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And so I did as much as I could think of.
No, you did a great job. Who was your camera guy?
Well, one of the guys that works in the shop. Okay. I brought him in.
He did a great job.
He's also my cousin too. And I brought him out and he's going, "You want me to do what?"
Yeah, what are we doing?
And
now?
So I said, "Well, just don't get any grease on my phone while you're filming."
There you go.
So, but yeah, he did a great job. And actually he's retired and he just works in the shop and that's why I could pull him away.
Yeah, yeah.
He used to sell batteries.
Oh, so he knows battery stuff.
Well,
then.
Yeah. And so when we started talking about the battery, he went right in and was showing the little, how much amps is in it.
Amp hours.
And he starts talking about it, and I'm sitting here going, I have no idea what he's talking about. I hope somebody that's listening knows what he's talking about because he did a really good job talking about that.
Yeah, did a great job.
Yeah, it was fun.
All right, you got your new boat out. How'd that go?
Oh, man. New boat. I don't know. I'm the guy that's a shiny object. buy the shiniest object you can.
Shiny object or kettle corn, right?
And we figured that. This is not the boat. I bought this boat especially just for our clients and just for the guys that come pheasant hunting and hunting to have them say have something to use. And I love this boat. To me, it was just an old man's boat that you would see in the 1950 boot movie,
Super simple.
Super simple, little tiller drive. But I will say when I ordered it, and when the guy put the 50 horsepower on the back, I'm going, we're going to tiller drive 50 horsepower? Can I hang on to that?
Yeah, makes sense now, doesn't it?
And so I'm like, okay, well, don't act stupid, Rusty. Just play along. And it's fantastic. I mean, it jumps up on plane. It's super light.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't try to kill me when I'm putting it on the trailer or taking it off. I just had a blast with the thing. I got so excited when I took it off and I tied it to the dock and I moved the pickup of the trailer back up out of the way. And I just ran back down and got in the boat and took off. Yeah, I got a mile down the river. I was up behind Chief Joe there on Rufus Woods. Mm-hmm. I get a mile down up the river. I turned around. I drove all the way back to the dock, tied it up. I went back and got gloves and a coat. I was frozen.
We call that self-critiquing.
I was like, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't be, telling everybody my downfalls with this thing. But that thing runs so good.
Nice.
The next day we took it down. We took it to Banks Lake. We ran across the lake. We took it fishing because I didn't fish the day before. So one of my buddies, Dave the preacher, he came along and he's a big time fisherman, so we took it fishing and he
got it fishy, huh?
And we caught a walleye. So there we go.
There you go.
I saw a lot of deer and he just kept teasing me. He goes, "Nobody brings binoculars when they go fishing." I says, "I do."
I
see all of this. And I saw a deer running around. So now I know a few places I need to go shed hunting that I haven't been yet. But he was laughing and joking.
So the boat's fishy and easy to operate. So your clientele that comes up, it's not a huge learning curve to get them comfortable.
It's not. We've got, four life jackets in there for floating devices. We've got the horn, the flares, all the things that you need so that it's legal for, so you can just grab the thing and take it out.
Perfect.
We've got it set up where, if need be, I can take it down and put it at the dock for you. But it's also set up for guys that want to come.
Okay. I've got some guys that want to come for the week
the summer, when they want to come.
Great.
Did you see the... Fish and Wildlife Eric. We got to have nicknames for all these guys.
I was going to say, everybody's
his cousin Rick.
It's almost like being in the mob where everybody has a little code name, don't they?
But did you see Eric's post on, I don't know if it was on his personal page or the hunting page, but the little boy that won the three fish tournament for the.
No, I knew they were getting ready to do it.
Group and everything. Yeah, Eric got at the best I'll have to video. Check it out. Of this little boy, they came in on the boat, and the little boy started telling him about him catching a fish, and it's a big fish. And so he says, "Well, tell me, how did it go? How did you catch it?" And the little boy tells the story, and he goes, "Well, where is the fish?" And he goes, "Oh, it's right here," and he walks right over to the live, the live well, and he can't get the door open. So his dad pops the door open and he opens it up, and here's this huge walleye in there, and he goes, "Well, it's swimming around."
It's like a state record.
It's not a state record. Might be for a 3-year-old.
There you go. In the 3-year-old category.
He got it, carried it down to the weigh-in.
I'll have to check it out. That's great.
It was hilarious, and it's the best video ever. So nice. Yeah, Eric's going to be famous on that one. It's going to have 10 million views or something. But the three fish tournament went pretty well.
Great.
My guys didn't show up. I don't have any good stories or videos for them.
Yeah, things happen, right?
But that boat is sweet. It's easy to pull.
Nice. We plan to do some more. Maybe we'll do a broadcast from there or something. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be kind of cool. Yeah. Can I take my binoculars?
Yeah. Always got to take the binoculars. Always scanning. All right. Well, we're coming up on the end of our time here, but can we go through this podcast's Rusty's calendar? What you got? We're April 15th, tax day, so that's where we're at, 2025. What have you got?
Yeah, well, we've got the chicks come in next week.
Okay.
So we're really finishing up all
these
touches.
Pheasant chicks.
Right. Correct.
Okay, just to make sure everybody knows what kind of program we're running.
Well, you know, the teenage boys that came in were
disappointed.
Spring break, you know, they think that's the funniest thing ever when I tell them, you know, I'm going to the airport to pick up chicks. So, you know, it's not where they would go to pick up chicks.
And I can tell you hanging out at the airport. That's not the place. Nothing there you want to bring home.
I love that line. I do.
That's a T-shirt. We need to do a T-shirt or something.
Yeah. You know, be a pheasant farmer so you can go to the airport and pick up chicks.
Exactly.
I think it's a good T-shirt.
Exactly. So. All right. So we got baby chicks coming.
The trout opener is the 26th.
Okay.
Those guys are getting ready for that. Mm-hmm. On the way over here, the last bachelor party of the pheasant season is
That are in,
and so they're coming in, and they were raring to go. I got to visit with them, so we're looking forward to them.
All right,
and so we added we're gonna do a barbecue for them when they get done.
There we go.
Yeah, you know, told the guy, says you can only get married once, so we're gonna do this.
Yeah, it depends.
And he goes, "Well, I hope so." And I says, "Well, that's all up to you."
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
I don't get to have a say in that. So.
Yep, as long as you learn how that works, right? I'm sorry, dear. That won't happen again, dear.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Exactly. And then we got the turkey, the non-youth, but the regular turkey season's open.
Today.
And so like we said, your location out at Sims Corner, maybe not a turkey mecca. However, a great jumping off spot to run the Ponderay or some of those other spots that are good.
I know we can't hunt turkeys on the reservation, but when I was on the boat the other day, there was some bald eagles in the tree. We'll have to look, see if that makes the video on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
But I took some pictures of bald eagles sitting down there on some of the trees on the river, and turkeys start gobbling.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some around.
And so, but the ones that were gobbling were on the north side of the river. Mm-hmm. It's on the wrong side for me. So, but yeah, they were going at it. Mm-hmm. I could hear them, but I could not find them. You know, gave me something to do while I was driving around on the boat, trying to boat out. But there's turkeys out there. Guys are excited.
And it's a great jumping off spot for activities too. Yeah, so
absolutely. You know. Absolutely.
Let's see. So how about your mule deer folks? What should they be doing now? We talked about sighting your stuff in, getting your fitness ready to go for some walking.
Yeah, you need to be shooting your bow now.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that, you know, the true gold stand you got there. And I've seen those at the show.
I've seen them and never thought about them. And then one day I was just thinking to myself, I keep laying this thing down, don't I?
They need to be shooting that. Mm-hmm. I'd like to tell all my rifle guys, you know, take your rifle out at least once a month and go shoot a target or something.
There's muscle memory and there's all kinds of things, right? And,
you know, but so many of them, the last time they shot their gun was when they shot their deer last year, you know, and they show up.
That's why we're doing the friendly nudge.
It is. It's
just
a friendly
get out there
nudge.
And make sure that stuff is ready to go, that your gear's still good and your boots still fit. Yep.
We didn't put it on the list, but it just popped into my head. My new steel targets are coming in. next week.
Which ones are those? Which brand are they?
These are the Boulder Creek.
Those are the AR.
Yes, 500? The AR 500 steel. The newer AR 500.
Get your range
a different
set
one,
up,
I guess, now. So, and I haven't decided what we're going to put those out. The one target that the guy made, and I've bought targets from this guy before. He's out of Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Let's just go with that because I can't think of the name of the city right now. But he's out of Oregon, and he's an engineer, and so everything's done, you know, to specs.
The way you would do it if you knew, yeah.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. If I knew. Let's go with that.
If you knew how to do it, that's how you do it.
But he made this target that is one MOA at 1,000 yards.
Okay. So size-wise, right? Representative. Yep. Okay.
And so he made a big square target that's, I don't remember how many MOAs it is, and then he has a swinging plate in the center of it that is one MOA at 1,000 yards. I was fascinated.
And it's a great idea.
As much long-range shooting as my dad likes to do.
Oh, yeah. Your dad would be playing with that all week.
We're going to play with that. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of excited, so... We just got to get him healthy enough to start shooting again. So
he
just had another little procedure.
Yeah, is he doing okay?
He is. He is recovering real good. He's ornery as all get out. So
that means he's doing well.
Exactly.
Then. What's he shooting for long range? What is he like?
He's got two.
Yeah.
He's got a 6.5 Creedmoor that he's got set up for long range. Mm-hmm. And then he's got his 7 mag.
Okay.
He's been a 7 mag since before Rick and I were born, and he's not going to give it up.
No. I figured if he's doing some really long range, he might have gone to the 6.5 to be able to shoot more or something.
And for whatever reason, he won't do the PRC. He stays with the Creedmoor. But he likes that 6.5. He's at the stage of life right now that he plays with a lot more with the ballistic coefficients and the reloads.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And then his best friend that, you know, that Rick and I have hunted with, Jerry, they're crazy shooters. Jerry's a crazy shooter.
Oh, I'm sure he's going to play with that.
Yeah,
that
he
target.
Knows all of that stuff. And in fact, if I want to know something, I call Jerry.
Yeah. And all you can do is ask one question and you're going to get a week's worth of phone calls and answers.
Yeah, the Hornady manual's coming out.
I always heard Mike Holmgren say something about Matt Hasselbeck that, you know, don't ever ask Matt what time it is because he'll tell you how they built the watch.
Yep, I've heard
and,
that.
And Jerry's that way with shooting. I just want to work on one aspect of shooting, but I get the whole thing. But it's good to have friends like that.
Oh yeah,
because
I
use
keeps
better.
You out of trouble.
I don't need to go read it because I can just call Jerry and he'll tell me. And Dad's the same way now. Dad's getting to that point where he reads a lot of that stuff, and you know, he watches way more outdoor shows than I do.
Oh
now.
Yeah,
I still haven't got to where I can watch that much TV. So
yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, so that's our calendar.
Great. Well,
and you're flying again next week.
Oh God, yeah. Well, I was able to miss Augusta, right? The all the airplanes descending on Augusta, and I got to be home, and it's spring break here in Snoqualmie, so I'm home with my family, my kids. So yeah, I don't begrudge those events, but they're just clusters when they happen because things go sideways, or they run out of gas, or they forgot to order another fuel truck, or catering trucks broke down. I mean, it's just thousands of airplanes descending on little tiny places that aren't equipped for it. So. It looks like it was a fun time, and it was fun to see Rory win. But
it was.
But I'm just not a golf guy. For the amount of people I fly around that are golf guys, and it's just lost on me. Now I'll stand out there and shoot targets all day. I think is the same. same kind of deal where you have to get rid of everything and just shoot your bow. But going to the driving range doesn't. Then it's not my kind of thing. I had a famous guy on board with, I don't remember what company it was, but with his representative. You know, they fly with all the different brand manufacturers. The guy was like, I'm going to hook you up with a set of clubs. What size are you? And I said, large. And he goes, you're not really a golfer, are you? Because that's not how they're measured. And I don't waste it on me. Give it to somebody else. But that's the only thing I can equate it to is shooting arrows. It must be the same kind of, you know, muscle memory and your shot sequence or whatever. Yeah. But going out and hitting golf balls doesn't look like that much. I had more fun driving the golf carts than I do golfing. So
yeah.
Not my thing yet anyway. So,
oh.
What you got?
that Tour of Duty, Veterans Group.
Okay, what you got there?
They are having a golf classic or fundraiser that they do, golf tournament they put on. And they come out every year. They bring a bunch of veterans out. They're a good group. They come out every year and shoot some pheasants, take the cabins and do some pheasants hunting and do all that. And so I want to give them a shout out. And as I started looking into it, I ended up sponsoring one of the holes. So if you can get down to Wenatchee and get in on that Tour of Duty, that golf tournament, that's going to be a good one for them. It's coming up May 31st. And
it was the Highlands one or whatever that one
is. Is that where it is? Yeah, it says Highlands? Yeah, yeah. That's the one on the East Wenatchee side.
Yeah, okay.
And so that'll work out good for us. And so we're going to be down there with them to kind of support them. They've, like I said, they've come hunting in the last 3 or 4 years with me. And
yeah, tourofduty.org. And it's the 2025 golf tournament, May 31st at Highlander Golf Course.
All right.
And there you are. There's HRO Adventures and HRO Outfitters on there. And
well, that's awful cool. Nice. I mean, yeah. Put that up there already.
It might be from, it looks like it's from last year, but
I didn't sponsor
neat picture. It's up there. Pheasant Hunt 2024. So maybe they just haven't updated their slide yet. Anyway, maybe we should have them on the podcast or try to connect with them.
That's well, let's do that. I'll give Courtland a call and see if he'll come out.
All righty.
So anyway, yeah, that's all I got.
Sorry all right. That's great. At the last second. Let's support them. Well, guys, we are at an hour and 23 minutes. So we're at the end of our time. Appreciate you guys making the time to drive all the way out. And it was great to meet you, Rick. Mm-hmm. And
thanks for coming on, Rick.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun to reminisce and tell some stories.
Yeah, it's pretty
neat.
Had
a few stories pop into my mind I haven't thought about for a while. So
yeah.
That was kind of fun.
That's the beauty of the outdoor stuff, right? Get to remember some of those things, whether they were buffoonery or great or
well,
whatever.
We didn't get into the personal stories. Real bad.
We'll have to come back to that.
Yeah. Someday we'll invite cousin Rick back to the.
Remember the old days when that stuff couldn't come on TV till like after 9 o'clock. You know, it's like a certain time where.
Right now we're
everybody needs TV, to be in PG, bed if this is coming on.
We're
yeah,
podcast exactly. PG.
Exactly.
We're not to the mature.
Exactly. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Guys, thanks for making the time. And once again, let's thank the folks that work over here at the Snoqualmie Inn in Snoqualmie, Washington. Absolutely. Again, just located right off of I-90 and Highway 18, perfect spot for your travel sports team, for outdoorsmen passing from west to east and just need a place to park the truck and the boat. They're super accommodating. They've got plenty of rooms. They've got discounts for groups and teams and seminars. So just go onto the website for the Snoqualmie Inn and look for Lori Hayes' contact information, and she'll take care of you. So
perfect.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Right. We'll
Thanks.
Sign off.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.